compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back.
Come on, man.
No, really, welcome back.
Come on, man.
No, seriously, welcome back.
Come on, man.
All right. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We do have lines open. Feel free to call. 888-914-9149. I have received a message from somebody I know, but I don't know who it is because he didn't tell. His name is Tim, but I don't remember which Tim. I know a lot of Tims. And so Tim just texted me to say, Patrick, listening to your wonderful radio show and your discussion of the California missions and those running north in California, I also wanted to remind you that the Spanish missions also ran east all the way to Goliad, Texas, where the lovely Mission Espiritu Santo and Presidio La Bahia are, and is where ranching was founded. Hope to see you soon. I know who that Tim is. Now I know, and it just clicked in my mind. Tim, I know who you are now. Thank you. And I do remember the wonderful hospitality that you and your wife, Pat, shared with us when I visited your home within the last couple of years. So yes, indeed, I do remember. Thank you for that text, Tim. I appreciate it. Yeah, you're right, of course, about that. But I was referring to St. Junipero Serra, and his activities were confined basically to California. He was in Mexico, but then in California. So you're absolutely right. There's a long and honorable pedigree of California missions being established much further beyond California. But hopefully you understand now why I didn't mention those details. And I'm glad you texted me. Thank you. I look forward to getting back to Texas and maybe visiting with you and your family again. 888-914-9149. Something else I really want to share with you is the great news about last week's pledge drive. Yesterday, I gave you a big thank you, and I'm going to thank you again for your generosity. The total on the pledge drive, well, let's start with the goal. The goal was $2.7 million, and we not only achieved the goal, but we went over the goal to the tune of 111.23%. So the need was $2.7 million, and we actually received, due to your generosity and God's grace, $3 million. And $3,215. So again, thank you very much. We are deeply grateful. We pray that God will reward your generosity. And if, as it happens, maybe you were busy or you're traveling or something was going on and you weren't able to participate in the pledge drive, it's over now, so we're not going to get into pledge drive mode. But you can still join us. We'll still count you if you want to go to relevantradio.com and make a pledge there, or you can go to your Relevant Radio app and make a pledge there. So either way, we would love to have you in on that if you want to. There's still time. But again, thank you. We sure appreciate it. 888-914-9149. Now, Cyrus, I know, well, I'm confident that you don't think the earth is flat. Would I be correct in that?
Yes, that's true.
All right. Come on, man. You don't believe the earth is flat, do you?
No.
I know you don't. I mean, I assumed you didn't. I never actually asked you. I mean, you look like a round earth guy.
There's no such thing as a stupid question. And
you've always struck me as a round earth guy.
I am a round earth guy. I'm one of those round earthers.
Have you ever? I don't know that I have ever actually met a flat earth person. I mean, who really believes that the earth is flat. It seems ridiculous on the face of it.
Yeah, it does.
Have you ever talked to anybody who...
No.
This is not a joke question, honestly.
No,
I've never met anybody who holds that view.
I have talked to some crazy conspiracy theorists, you know, like...
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, right. Like, some celebrities are actually lizard people, you know, just crazy talk. But I've never met one single person that actually thought the Earth was flat.
Isn't there an NBA star or two who publicly said that maybe the Earth is flat? I think that I heard somebody say that.
You know, now that you say that, I do remember seeing something a year or two ago, and I think it was a rapper.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not in that world too much. I don't know. I just thought there was like an NBA basketball player who said that. But in any case, this is interesting. And those of you, especially if you have kids in school who are learning about cosmology and the heavens and things, this might be an interesting article for them.
Basketballs are round. Earth is flat.
Basketballs are round.
Earth is flat.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see where.
Look it up. Look it up.
All right.
Let me give you something to do, Cyrus. Maybe you can look up who the basketball player was who said that.
All right.
Okay, so I want to go through this. Actually, I found this fascinating when I first read it. So Popular Science, 10 easy ways you can tell for yourself that the Earth is not flat. The evidence is right in front of you. So the first of the 10 ways, the moon. Now that humanity knows quite positively that the moon is not a piece of cheese, we also know that the moon is round. We've been there. We can see it through telescopes. So since the Earth is rotating, the constant oval shadow it produces in each and every lunar eclipse proves that the Earth is not only round, but spherical, absolutely, utterly, beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's not flat. Now, there's more to each of these points. I'm just going to kind of skim the peaks here. But the science of looking at the moon will tell you that the Earth must be round, can't be flat. Second point, ships in the horizon. If you've been next to a port or have just walked down the beach and looked at the horizon, you've noticed an interesting phenomenon. Approaching ships do not just appear on the horizon like they would if the world was flat, but they seem to emerge from beneath the sea. But they're not submerged, and they're not like rising up out of the water. The reason the ships appear as if they emerged from the waves is because the world is not flat. It's round. Imagine an ant walking along the surface of an orange into your field of view. If you look at the orange head on, you will see the ant's body slowly rising from the horizon because of the curvature of the orange. If you would do that experiment with the ant approaching along a long road rather than a round object, the effect would change. The ant would slowly materialize into view. So it would just be there. It wouldn't appear to rise up. The third one is varying star constellations. After returning from a trip to Egypt, Aristotle noted, there are stars seen in Egypt and Cyprus which are not seen in the northerly regions. This phenomenon can only be explained if humans were viewing the stars from a round surface. Aristotle continued, claiming that the sphere of the Earth is of no great size, for otherwise the effect of so slight a change of place would not be quickly apparent. So Popular Science says the farther you go from the equator, the farther the known constellations go toward the horizon to be replaced by different stars. This could not happen if the world was flat. Fourth point, shadows and sticks. Weren't you in that band for a while, Cyrus? Didn't you play keyboards for Shadows and Sticks at one time?
Shh.
Okay. If you stick a stick in the ground, it will produce a shadow. The shadow moves as time passes, which is the principle for ancient shadow clocks. If the world were flat, then two sticks in different locations would produce the same shadow, but they don't because the Earth is round and not flat. The fifth one, seeing further and higher. Standing on a flat plateau, if you look ahead toward the horizon, you strain your eyes and then take out your favorite binoculars and stare through them as far as your eyes with the help of the binoculars can see. Next, climb up the closest tree. The higher, the better. Just be careful not to drop your binoculars. And look again and strain your eyes and stare through the binoculars out to the horizon. The higher up you climb, the farther you will see. Usually, we tend to relate this to earthly obstacles, like the fact that we have houses or trees obstructing our vision. Even if you stood on a completely clear plateau with no obstacles between you and the horizon, you would see much farther from the greater height than you would on the ground. This phenomenon is caused, can you guess why it's caused, Cyrus? The curvature of... Cyrus?
You got me.
The Earth.
Oh.
Yeah. Six, you can ride in an airplane. If you've ever taken a trip, especially a long-distance trip, you notice two interesting facts about planes and the Earth. Planes travel in a relatively straight line for a very long time, and they don't fall off the edge of the planet because they're circling the Earth. If you look out the window on a transatlantic flight, you can most of the time see the curvature of the Earth on the horizon. You can see this in other planets. The Earth is different from other planets. After all, we have life and there's no life on the other planets, but there are certain characteristics that all planets have. And it's quite logical to assume that if all planets behave a certain way or show certain characteristics, specifically if those planets are in different places or were created under different circumstances, our planet is the same. If so many planets that were created in different locations and under different circumstances show the same property, it's likely that our own planet has the same property as well. All of our observations show that the other planets are spherical. And since we know how they're created, it's also obvious why they take this shape. Unless we have a very good reason to think otherwise, which we don't, our planet is very likely the same. Then it gets into some science with Galileo. He observed the moons rotating and orbiting around Jupiter, and he saw Jupiter rotating. I'm not going to go too deep into that.
Yeah, one. Patrick, just, tell us.
I'm trying. Number eight, the existence of time zones. The time in New York at the moment these words were written was 12 p.m. This, he gets into the different time zones around the world. Adelaide, Australia, for example. Beijing, China, for example. He says, the fact that there are different time zones is because in Beijing, when it's 12 p.m. in New York, it's 12 a.m. It's midnight and the sun is nowhere to be found. In Adelaide, Australia, it's 1:30 a.m., more than 13 hours ahead. There, the sunset is long gone, so much so that the sun will soon rise up again at the beginning of the new day. This can only be explained if the world is round and rotating around its own axis. At a certain point, when the sun is shining on one part of the earth, the opposite side is dark and vice versa. So that gets into the issue of time zones, etc. The ninth one is the pull of gravity. They say an interesting fact about mass, not the kind that you go to on Sunday. Mass, it attracts things to it. The force of attraction or gravity between two objects depends upon their mass and the distance between them. Simply put, gravity will pull toward the center of the mass of an object. To find the center of mass, you have to examine the object. So if you look at a sphere, no matter where you stand on it, you have exactly the same amount of sphere under you. A sphere's center of mass is in the center of the sphere, which means gravity will pull anything on the surface of the sphere straight down to the center of the sphere. This will occur no matter where on the surface the object is located. The center of mass on a flat plate is in its center. So the force of gravity will pull anything on the surface toward the middle of the plane. So if you have a plane or a plate in this example here, the center of gravity will be in the middle of it. So their point is that no matter where you are on the earth, you're not being pulled toward the middle of a plane. You're being pulled down through gravity to the center. And then lastly... I'm almost done, Cyrus. Images from space. In the past 60 years of space exploration, we've launched satellites, probes, and people into space, and all of them show that the Earth is spherical. The curvature of the Earth is visible in the many, many, many photos snapped by astronauts aboard the International Space Station. So it's amazing to me that there are people who still think that the Earth is flat.
Is it worth arguing with someone who thinks the Earth is flat? Is it even worth it? At that point, can't you just like walk away from the conversation? Like, okay. Have
fun. Would have to figure out if the person genuinely believed it or if they're just on a lark, just trying to, you know, to mix things up and get under people's skin.
Well, that you could have fun with, but if they genuinely believe it, I mean, is there any, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, Jesus said, he said that when you go into a town, and you preach the gospel and they won't listen to you, move on. Mm-hmm. Shake the dust from your feet and move forward. So I think that biblical principle would apply in this case.
That's good.
Unless it's like your own child, in which case you probably have a vested interest in trying to get, you know. So anyway, so just for all the people out there who might run into this, that's there. Popular science, interesting. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We have some lines open right now. 888-914-9149. Now, this is a question that's going to become more and more prevalent as time goes on, and it is vaccine related, so brace yourselves. Can an employer legally require you to get a COVID-19 vaccine? So the Wall Street Journal, they have a rundown here on what the legalities are with regard to mandatory vaccination policies. This may interest you. They say it may be the better part of a year before a COVID-19 vaccine is available to the general public. Now, this, of course, is currently in place right now. But companies are now looking to see whether or not this is something that should be required. So they say legally, there's little preventing private companies from imposing vaccinations on their own. This is according to the lawyers who were consulted. The only significant legal limitations are federal and state laws prohibiting discrimination in the workplace. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 could require employers to accommodate employees who object to a vaccination because it would conflict with their sincerely held religious beliefs. If employers have a medical condition that makes it unsafe for them, to get a vaccine, they could also try to get an exemption under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of a disability. Under that law, employers must reasonably accommodate disabled employees unless doing so would be prohibitively difficult or expensive. Carrie Hoffman, who is a Dallas-based employment lawyer, she says it's going to be a tough call for a lot of employers. She said it could be time-consuming and costly for the company's human resources department to sort out individual opt-out requests. A company that mandates vaccines could also face a gross negligence suit or have to pay out a worker's comp claim if a vaccinated employee had a severe reaction. On the other side, Ms. Hoffman says, it is unlikely that a company would be held legally responsible for not requiring vaccinations if no law were violated. She says, I don't see how an employer would be liable for not mandating a vaccine. The U.S. Equal Opportunity The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which enforces federal laws prohibiting employment discrimination, has previously issued guidance on mandatory flu shots that emphasized that employees may be entitled to exemptions. The agency has said employers covered by the ADA, that's the Americans with Disabilities Act, should consider urging workers to get the flu vaccine rather than requiring them to receive it. Terminating an employee who refuses to be vaccinated should be a last resort, says James Paul, a lawyer at a law firm that represents employers. He says less drastic measures should be considered first, leaves of absence, more protective gear, etc. So this is still a work in progress. It's still playing out, and we'll see how that shapes up. Let's see. Let's go to some phone calls. Let's go to Kay, listening in Modesto. Good morning, Kay.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am well.
Hey, good. I just was listening as I'm driving to work, and I know this is a touchy subject and one that is not well received, but I do not believe that the Earth is a globe. And if you ask me why, it's kind of, you know, newer information, but... Basically, you were talking about the pictures from space, and all pictures have been proven to be CGI pictures at this point. We don't have any pictures of the Earth from space that are not graphically enhanced.
Who has proven this, Ken?
It's been proven over and over. The actual artists that create the pictures, they spoke about it. You can Google and look it up.
Well, this is interesting because I've seen interviews with some of the Apollo astronauts, for example, who themselves took the pictures, and they verified that they took the pictures, in some cases, from the surface of the moon. So they were the creators of the pictures in the sense that they took the pictures, and there was no CGI involved.
Yeah, you got to take a look back at those pictures, and you got to take a look back at what they're referencing.
No, I don't. I can refer to the astronauts, you know, the Buzz Aldrins and the other astronauts who were on the moon, and they took pictures with the cameras, and they said, here's the picture I took, and look, the Earth is round.
Sure they did, and also they have not really proven that they have went to the moon. They've also not been back to the moon. So if you can explain to me how they can get there once and not get there again, and then say all the technology to get there again has been destroyed, it kind of disproves their point. There's a lot of conspiracy and things of that nature wrapped around it. And I know it's hard. I hear you guys saying, hey, just hang up on somebody or turn away, walk away. You even likened it to the gospel, dusting off your feet. And this is not a gospel. According to the Bible, the earth is founded on foundations, four corners. It's immovable. It doesn't move, according to the Bible. Also,
well, hang on a second. You mentioned that we've only been to the moon once, but we've got the evidence of six missions to the moon. We know who the astronauts were. We know when they went to the moon. So we've been back to the moon. at least a half a dozen times. Now, that's with manned lunar landings, but we also have sent many probes and instruments to the moon that have landed on the moon. So I don't know where you're getting this idea that we've only been there once and never went back, but a lot of people have
been on the moon. We've never went back.
Yeah, we went back five more times.
How come we haven't been back since?
Well, that's a different question. You said that we've only been to the moon once and we never went back. That's just simply not true.
We've only had one recorded instance of us going to the moon. Maybe they were saying there were several missions, but they've never been back since the 60s.
No.
So technology has improved. We've gotten more advanced with rocket technology. But
we've got all the evidence we could possibly want. Between 1968 and 1972, there were six manned missions to the moon. We have the photographs, we have the moon rocks, we have the video footage, we have every possible way you can prove that it happened. We have that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question, Kate, just because I've got to take a break. What's in it for you to insist that the Earth is flat? What is the reason behind that, if there is one?
Well, I don't believe in the heliocentric model. I think it was a lie. I think it was meant to create distance between us and God. I don't believe the sun is as far as it is away. I believe it rotates around the earth. That's why you have seasons. That's why you have time zones. I also believe that if you just think about the simple fact that the earth's spinning 1,000 miles per hour.
Would you hold the geocentrist view, Kay? Kay, do you hold the view of geocentrism then?
Earth and the sun are basically equidistant and the same size, and they rotate around the Earth. And this
How do you explain the fact that the Hubble telescope shows that the objects in space are going outward, that the universe is expanding away from us? Oh, we don't have any time. Well, something to think about, Kay. Interesting conversation. Thank you. I'll be right back with more right after this. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Giddy up. See what I just did there, Cyrus? Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149. Things are lighting up on Twitter. People are reacting to the call that we just had. The gentleman who does not believe that the Earth is round. So Katrina D. on Twitter, she says, "We have in our possession original photos from NASA spacewalks and Earth from our father-in-law when he worked at NASA and was training in the space program." That's cool. That's really cool. Did he ever go up into space? You'll have to answer me on Twitter, Katrina.
Yeah.
Did he ever actually go up? That's pretty cool.
Were those pictures signed by Stanley Kubrick, who directed the moon landing?
Ah, I thought you would ask about that. Well, scroll down another scroll or two, and Isaac Herrera sent me on Twitter a clip of Stanley Kubrick, or a person who's supposed to look like Stanley Kubrick. He's saying, "In this scene, you're on the moon, and it's real, and we're fooling America," and action. So it's like a movie set with an astronaut, and the guy who's supposed to be Stanley Kubrick is telling him how to make it look real. Thank you, Isaac. Kind of funny.
that is hilarious.
You see that one?
Yeah, I've never seen that before. That's really funny.
Mary T. on Twitter says, "Patrick, my neighbor thinks the world is flat. I had a blank stare when he was talking to me, so convinced. I was just trying to figure out if he was for real." Yeah, so that's kind of neat. Thank you guys for participating. As you probably guessed by now, I don't hold the geocentrist view. I do believe that we orbit around the sun, and I do believe that the Earth is not flat. It is round for all the reasons I just mentioned and many more. But it's still an interesting fact that there are people who don't hold that view. So something to look at. Also, there was something else about that, Cyrus, I wanted to see if I could share, but I've lost track of it wherever it was. Maybe I'll find it again. Oh, Bill Moody clocks in now with an interesting Okay. Bill, I won't even try to describe this. I'll just let people look at it. So I just liked what Bill Moody put up there. Bill Moody's a charter member of Team Taco, and it is Taco Tuesday. Thank you, Bill. More phone calls. Let's go now to Robert in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Patrick. I had a prayer practice that I was wanting to know if I could run by you and test for being theologically sound.
I'll give it my best shot.
Thank you. I had always heard that, you know, there's the traditional rosary, which I pray. But I've also heard that you could assign different mysteries from like a specific rosary. There's this one that I've been doing off and on for about 3 years, but religiously for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And would it be all right to mention those mysteries?
Yeah.
And then
go ahead, sure.
Like a sentence while I'm explaining. Okay, so the mysteries that I'm praying, and this would go right before the joyful mystery, so it kind of times out well that it makes it five for the weekday. And I started off with it being the name of Mary, and what I meditate on when I'm doing that is kind of like how God says our name was written on his heart and how he knew us before the creation of the world. Mm-hmm. And I've heard Mary compared to the burning bush. And so I think of how God has a plan, had a specific plan for Mary even before the first moment in time was created, and how he has a plan for each of us. And so that's the first one, the name of Mary. And then the second is the Immaculate Conception. And I like that one because, you know, Mary was conceived by natural means. And so the idea of the rosary is that, you know, we're relating to it. And so you have the when Mary conceived Jesus, but this one is about when Mary was conceived. And then the third is the childhood of Mary. And this is why I bring this up to you, because this these mysteries don't have record in the Bible. But I remember this old book when I was a kiddo growing up and going through Catholic school, and it mentioned that Mary's parents, Anne and Joachim, the names we give to them are Joachim, brought her to the temple, and that she was raised in the temple. I've never seen anything like that again, so I don't know if that's true or not, but regardless, we all had a childhood. And so the idea of the rosary is that, you know, we're identifying through God's work in humanity through the eyes of Mary. And so the idea of the childhood of Mary, and during that mystery, I usually imagine each one of my children with their distinct personalities kind of playing with Mary at her age. And so the childhood of Mary. And then the fourth would be, and these last two, again.
Let me ask you the question, Robert, just because I think time is of the essence here. I think I have an idea now of what you're describing. So you've fashioned, for lack of a better term, these mysteries in which, when you're praying the rosary, you're concentrating on the role of Mary. And is your question to me, is it okay to do that?
Well, specifically the last two, because there was the death of Mary's parents and then the betrothal to Joseph, and I have them in that order, but I don't know that they happened in that order. And so that's it. I was just wondering what you thought of that. And it fits in nicely right before the joyful mysteries, because it completes it all the way from before time and then the glorious mysteries to the end of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think it's always a good thing whenever you spend some time meditating upon Our Lady and her role in salvation. And she, of course, was the first Christian. She was the highest, best Christian, the example to all of us of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. So far be it from me to discourage anybody from meditating upon those biblical themes. So to the extent that that's what you're doing, Robert, I don't see any reason to discourage that. My only thought would be that as you do that, I'm assuming that you are continuing to pray the rosary as such. In other words, you're praying the meditating on the joyful and sorrowful and glorious mysteries, and then, of course, the new ones from Pope John Paul II, the luminous mysteries. So as long as you don't lose sight of the rosary as the church prays it, I think these extra meditations on Our Lady, from a biblical standpoint, I don't see any harm or problem with that, if you're asking my personal opinion.
Yep.
Okay.
Is there any clue to whether Mary was betrothed to Joseph before Anne and Joachim died?
Biblically, no. There's no biblical information about that. Now, we do have some commentaries on her by the church fathers. We do have some theorizing from the church fathers. There are also, for example, private revelations from people like St. Bridget of Sweden or Blessed Anna Catherine Emmerich, who have offered their perspectives on what they believe took place based upon their visions. But that's purely private revelation, and so it's not in any way binding or incumbent upon you or anyone else. It's permitted for you to assume that those things may be correct, but you're not obliged to do so. If you'd like to read a full-scale discussion of the Rosary as such, Robert, I would recommend Rosarium Virginis Mariae, which is the Latin for the Rosary of the Virgin Mary, and that was written by Pope John Paul II. So if you want to read that, he gives you a vast, comprehensive overview of the history and the meaning and the biblical basis of the Rosary. So that probably would be a good next step for you. Thank you. Let's go to Louis now, listening in Lexington, Kentucky. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Welcome aboard.
Good. My question is this. I have a niece who is going to getting married, and she's married another lady. And so I'm struggling a little bit about going to the wedding. I don't want to hurt family's feelings. But my other thought is by going, and of course this is a celebration that's going to happen. And my belief is, of course, they're putting themselves in a situation where they'll be living in sin.
Is the niece of yours, is she Catholic?
Yes. Well, no, okay. I don't think she's practicing Catholic, no. No.
Okay. I think I can cut to the chase and offer you the advice that I think you're looking for. And that is, if it were me, I wouldn't go for two reasons. Number one, the nature of this attempt at marriage itself is not something that we would go and celebrate because objectively it's sinful. And the second reason is because she's a baptized Catholic, even though she doesn't practice anymore. If she wants to get married, she has an obligation to get married in the church, and this is a one-man, one-woman marriage. So there are two reasons right there why I would not go. Now, I realize this may be painful and difficult and may cause problems, and sometimes that's inevitable. It's sad, but sometimes it's inevitable. But if I were her uncle, I would say, I love you very much. I wish I could be there to support you. You know, I love you, and I'll never stop loving you, but I don't agree with what you're doing. And I can't be there to celebrate something that I think is spiritually harmful to you. So I'm afraid I won't be able to be there. That's what I would say.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Okay, thanks, Louis. Yeah, these situations can be very painful in families where this kind of thing happens. And so I don't mean ever to be callous. We shouldn't be callous. We shouldn't be brutal. But at the same time, you have to stand your ground. And don't go along to get along. If there's something that you know that if you go and do, you're going to be sending the signal that you approve of it, then don't go and do, because that's a form of scandal. 888-914-9149. We'll step away for a quick timeout. Once again, just a big thank you to all of you who participated in our pledge drive last week. It was a bit white-knuckle-ish in the middle of the week, and then your generosity really came through in a big way. Thank you. Thank you, Lord. And we went to 111.23% of our goal. So we had a goal of 2.7 million, and we got to a little over 3 million. Thank you. If you still want to donate, you can by going to relevantradio.com or use the Relevant Radio app. I'll be right back.
Yeah! tres, cuatro tacos. Don't forget the rice and beans on the plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo. Uno, dos, tres.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday.
Coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday is my favorite day. That's the reason why I'm on.
Welcome back. This is the song I always enjoy. Thank you for playing it early on, Cyrus. Okay. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, do you believe that Madonna listens to this program?
I would put money on it that she doesn't.
Well, I have an email from her. Well, I mean, it's from somebody
named
Madonna.
Someone named Madonna? All right.
You think it's the same one?
There can only be one.
No, there's more than one.
Did she have a last name?
On this email, yes, but I don't have that in front of me.
It can't be her then.
Yeah.
Because Madonna only has one name.
Guess again. Anyway, so this is from Madonna, but a different Madonna. And Madonna writes to me and she says, Patrick, what do you think of the author Ron Phillips? Some of his books seem interesting, but I want to make sure his writing follows the Catholic faith. Now, I have not read any of his books. I'm aware of a couple of them. One is about demons and spiritual warfare, and my understanding of his work is that he sort of focuses on those things. So I have not read them, so I can't give you a recommendation one way or the other. My impression is that he's well-known in that area. What I would recommend, if you want something that you can use as a benchmark, would be to read the writings of actual exorcists. So, the late Father Gabriel Amorth, for example, who was an exorcist in Rome for many years, and he wrote a couple of books. The first of which is called "An Exorcist Tells His Story." This was published by Ignatius Press, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And he would know, because he was officially delegated by his bishop to be, if not the major exorcist for the Archdiocese of Rome, one of them. And that book, I tell you, is really eye-opening. And my advice would be, since I don't have any information about this particular author, I would read the books by actual exorcists so that you get a kind of a sense of what's what and what's real and what really happens and what you should and shouldn't do. And believe me, the exorcist will give you advice about things like, don't you ever try to confront the devil. Flee from him, turn away from him, you know, say your prayers, ask God to rebuke him, etc. But don't ever try to go toe-to-toe with a devil who's trying to cause you problems, because you're not prepared for it. And the church has special ministers who do this, known as exorcists. That's one of the words of advice that the exorcists will give you, and they know what they're talking about. So that would be my answer. Read some of those books by actual exorcists in the Catholic faith, and then you'll have something that you can use to make a judgment if you're reading something to say, that's not true. Thank you. Let's go to Tom now in Phoenix. Good morning, Tom. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about when Jesus was, quote, lost in the temple, end quote. Mm-hmm. It, as a young man, it just seemed so out of character that he would leave Mary and Joseph unaware of what he was doing, and that they would be worried about him for 3 days. And then when they would finally find him, he would actually kind of reprimand them and say, don't you know I was have to be about my father's business, or words to that effect. And it's just, it's so out of character for a loving Jesus, our God. And it's just, I wonder if you have any comment on that.
I have a few thoughts. I myself have always felt somewhat puzzled by the reaction that you're evincing here, Tom. I don't find it at all troublesome or at all difficult or out of character. So whenever this question comes up, I always have to stop and think, okay, well, why would somebody be bothered by this? And so when it's come up before, I've said the following. Number one, that this is part of the process of the unveiling of the identity of Jesus. So his mother, Mary, of course, knew exactly who he was, And I'm certain that St. Joseph was also maybe not quite as clear in terms of his mind being illuminated by this truth of the incarnation. But he probably too, St. Joseph, the foster father of Jesus, probably also had a very clear understanding of this. So from a human standpoint, it's understandable that they would be very, very flustered, very beside themselves, panicking because of their loss of their child. And any parent knows this feeling. When your child wanders away, you just immediately go into panic mode because that's what parents do. Now, Jesus was, he didn't leave his parents. He didn't like depart from them or anything. He just simply remained in the temple. That's where they were. And so when Mary and Joseph and the other people in their party, when they left the temple, the assumption is that Mary thought Jesus was with Joseph and Joseph thought Jesus was with Mary. And then they got a ways away and they realized, we don't have him. So they went back. So Jesus didn't trick them. He didn't leave them. He didn't like ignore their parental authority and run away. He didn't do any of those things. He just remained where he was. And then to the reaction that Jesus gives them, you know, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? So, and be in my Father's house. So this seems a bit stern to us, but it was, I think it was in character because Jesus was not frivolous. He was not emotional in the sense that he, you know, his emotions ran away with him. He was helping Mary and Joseph and the others to see even more about who he really is, who he really was. And in a way, I guess it kind of ties in with similar responses like at the wedding at Cana. When Mary says to Jesus, son, they have no more wine. Now, what does Jesus say to her? He said, woman, what does this have to do with you and with me? Now, to our 21st century English-speaking American ears, that sounds harsh. But it's really not. Jesus was not rebuking her, and by calling her woman, he was not putting her down. Because in English, modern 21st century American English, you say that. That is a put-down. It is a kind of a disrespectful way to address a woman, and especially if she's your own mother. But that's not what it meant in that context. And I would say the same is true in the finding in the temple, that Jesus was not being disrespectful. He was not being anything other than just very gravely telling the truth to his parents, and they were taken aback by that. So I know where you're coming from, Tom. I really do. But I wouldn't read more into it than is really there, which might be what's going on. What do you think?
Well, I'll try to look at it as you do. And I never had a problem with the incident at Cana because I had heard before that women had a different meaning back then. So that didn't affect me. But I just felt that Jesus being Jesus would have told them before they left that I'm going to stay here. And, you know, obviously I shouldn't be second guessing our Lord.
Yeah. Well, you know how it often happens when children get lost or something. It may be that he didn't have an opportunity to tell them. It may be that, you know, Joseph thinking that he was with Mary, that Joseph's, you know, he just got up and went and there was no reason for Jesus to tell Joseph anything because Joseph thought he was with his mother, so he just left. Okay. The men would typically travel together. The women would travel together. So it may well have been that there was no opportunity for Jesus to tell his parents anything. They just, without realizing he wasn't with them, they just left. So I think there are different ways to read it. Okay. Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you for hearing me out on that. I appreciate the call. 888-914-9149. Let's go to L in San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Elle.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I really enjoy
the
show. Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is that I have a granddaughter, and she's going to have a birthday soon, and I asked her what she wanted for her birthday, and she said she wanted some manga series books to read. And I've gone online, and they look kind of grim, and demonic. Really prefer not to send that. So I wanted to get your thought on it. Do you know about this?
Yeah.
What your thoughts are?
Yeah, so I think you said, did you say manga or did you say anime or which version are you referring to?
Well, manga series and it's anime.
Yeah.
So like you mentioned Jujutsu Kaisen and Toilet Bound, Hanako-kun,
Yeah, none of those things mean anything to me. None of those character names mean anything because I don't read it or follow it. My awareness of both of these Japanese cartoon forms, both manga and anime, is fairly superficial. So I want to just tell you that right up front. I'm not an expert on it, so I couldn't discourse on the merits or demerits of either one. But to the extent that I've ever seen it, my impression, especially because I guess maybe anime might be a little more prevalent, I guess, is that the girls in these cartoons typically are very voluptuous and are drawn in a way that would inflame the imagination. And I don't think I need to explain further. You probably already know what I'm referring to. So that right there, especially if you're talking about a young person, I would think that would be an occasion of sin. I know it would be for me, and I'm a grown man, but certainly if I were, you know, an adolescent, it would have been an occasion of sin for me big time. So for that reason alone, I would probably say, if it were me, I wouldn't buy that. Not to mention that the storylines and again, with my superficial, limited understanding of this world, my impression based upon what I've seen is that not infrequently the storylines go in those directions that would also be morally problematic. So I personally would not recommend it, especially for a young person, honestly.
Thank you. Just wanted to be sure I wasn't being too overly. I'm accused of that, you know.
Well, I want to. Let me put it this way, Elle. How old is the person in question?
She's going to be 12.
Okay, and it's a girl, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll just put it this way. Girls are different from boys. In many respects, they're not that different in some respects. And those who are old enough to remember like the Sears catalog and the JCPenney's catalog, remember when those used to come in the mail? Okay. I don't even think they have those anymore. Those could easily be an occasion of sin for young people, especially boys, if you follow my meaning. So even something as innocuous as a catalog that sells clothing and other items, you have to be careful because, you know, under the wrong circumstances, even something like that, human nature being what it is, can be an occasion of sin. So the best course of action, it seems to me, is in prudence and age appropriate, you have to make the right decision. I would just simply steer clear from anything that could be an occasion of sin for somebody. Now, the older the person gets, then, you know, it's different. You expect people to exercise good judgment as they grow older, but even that doesn't always happen, quite frankly. So I think as a rule of thumb, especially as a parent, to be prudent and wise in what you permit your children to be looking at. I just don't think that manga and anime are worth it. And the risks are higher than the values, if you ask me.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for your opinion, and I really appreciate it.
You got it. God bless you. God bless you, too. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let us go now to Mary. And Mary is in Tampa, Florida. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Patrick. My question comes from a person who is not a practicing Catholic anymore. Okay. Her question is about newborn babies, if they don't survive before they are baptized. Mm-hmm. She knows that the church no longer teaches about limbo. Her question is, are they taken directly to heaven?
Well, that's a very good question that so many people are wondering about, myself included. The church never taught limbo as an official doctrine, but the church does not discourage us from thinking that limbo might be the answer. Limbo would be a place of perfect natural happiness. So because the one thing that's necessary to go to heaven is sanctifying grace, you need sanctifying grace to live in heaven, without which you can't see God. So how do these unborn, I'm sorry, how do these born but not baptized babies, how do they go to heaven if they don't have sanctifying grace? Well, one option was they don't go to heaven, they go to limbo, so they're not punished because they didn't commit any sins, and in limbo they're in a place of perfect natural happiness, far greater, far better than anything we could possibly enjoy in this life. But it's not the beatific vision. So that's that option. That's an opinion. Another opinion is that in a way that God knows about that we don't, that he gives sanctifying grace to these babies so that they can go to heaven. That too is a viable position, and Catholics are free to hold that as well. That's the position I hold. The church doesn't say with certitude that that's what happens. But I like to think of what Pope Benedict XVI said about this issue, and he said that he thinks it's the right way is to trust and hope in God's mercy and love for these children such that he gives them sanctifying grace and they go to heaven. So I lean in that direction, Mary.
I see. Thank you. That's very helpful.
I'm glad. Thank you. Well, may all those little babies rest in peace. I'll be right back with hour three of our program right after this. Please don't go away. I'll be right back. Na 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 na.